Well, hello there, Waterville Community Church. It's Monday, August 8th, 2022. This is In the Know, episode 50. There are like three of you who listen to this who will actually get this, but I feel like saying, because it's episode 50, that I can kick and stretch. Few announcements, actually a lot of announcements. First of all, life groups are starting back up this month. You should hear from your life group leader about when those are going to be taking place. One ongoing thing is, like we talked about yesterday, we are hopefully going to take over this Manna House distribution in our building. And so if you're interested in getting involved with that, you can contact me. I'm making a list of people right now who have expressed interest so that I can see about how many people we're going to need over the course of the time that we do this. Today, August 8th, so like this evening at about, I don't know, however that works, is the deadline for hat orders. If you want to get one of those leather patch hats like we showed yesterday, you can submit that up until tonight. I'm going to stop taking the order forms there, and I'm going to make the order tomorrow for those hats. Then August the 10th, this Wednesday, 2 days from now at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we have a family that is coming in that needs help moving. If you're able to be there at 2 o'clock, let me know. I can give you more details. August the 14th is the security team initial meeting right after service. August the 19th is the LCU block party at 7 p.m. We need about four people willing to represent our church and give out pins and let people know what our church is all about. We will not have the t-shirts ready for then, but that's okay. August the 21st, two things, members meeting after service. We are going to, Lord willing, welcome two new members to our church, and we may also present our bylaws for a quick change just of the name so that our church's name appears correctly on the bylaws that we have. And then later we'll try to change them again. But we need to make that change. So we might do that at this meeting. August the 21st, evening service at 5 p.m. that night. August the 22nd, the day after that, is going to be the deadline for the t-shirt order. So in the newsletter, I've put a link out to the side there for the Google form so that you can order your t-shirts. We've already got people who have placed their order. You kind of sign up for it. You put your name, you put the total number of t-shirts, and then below that, you kind of give a breakdown of what adult and youth sizes you need to order. They're all going to be the same color this time around. They're going to be the Wardville Community Church on the front and then the We Love Wardville on the back. And then the end of this month, towards the beginning of next month, we have two baby showers, one for Tiffany Gautreau, August the 27th, 2 p.m. at Olivia Littleton's house. And then September 10th for Nikki Johnson, 2 p.m. at Olivia Littleton's house. If you want more information, let me encourage you to talk to Olivia Littleton. So let's do a little bit of sermon follow-up. I want to start with 1 Chronicles and Genesis 49. So this is, once again, Zach geeks out and gets in the weeds a little bit. So again, maybe you want to have your Bible open, or maybe you want to have the actual newsletter open, because you can click these links and it'll open it in a different window or a different tab for you so that you can read along or pause this and read a little bit of what this is saying and then go back and keep listening. So maybe you want to have that open right now. Totally up to you, but this is me giving you time to go find that right now. I'm just kind of stalling. Okay, as I mentioned yesterday, studying Genesis 49 and really all of Genesis from such a close perspective has helped my reading of other books of the Bible. I notice things I haven't noticed before later in the story or in other parts of the scriptures. One such section that's increased significance for me, that's had increased significance for me, is 1 Chronicles 1 through 6. And what I've noticed is studying Genesis has helped me read 1 Chronicles 1 through 6. And then 1 Chronicles 1 through 6 has in turn helped me understand more of what's going on in Genesis. So let me just tick off a handful of the things that have been neat to read and discover afresh. 1 Chronicles 1 opens up with genealogies from Adam through Jacob. That's 1 Chronicles 1, 1 through 54. Many of the names found there call to mind the stories of the book of Genesis. For instance, Adam, Seth, Ham, Shem, Canaan, Nahor, Terah, Abram, Ishmael, Isaac, Esau, Israel, Edom, who is Esau. I mean, so that's, those names basically tell the story of Genesis. And a lot of those are actually also found in the those Toledotes, that these are the generations of blank. They tell that story just through names. And so, as you're reading that, you can't help but go back to Genesis 12 or Genesis 9 or Genesis 36 when you look at Edom. And it's just a great thing to read and recognize the backstory behind this. These were real people who had real stories. And we actually only have a fraction of the events of their lives. Then 1 Chronicles 2, 1 and 2 lists the 12 sons of Israel, of Jacob, and then moves to the genealogy of Judah. And he does that, the chronicler, the one writing this, does that because it's moving from Jacob to King David. So we pick up with Judah and we get to King David. And that's what the story of Chronicles and Kings before it, that's about the kingdom. And so it's moving from Jacob to King David. Then you get to 1 Chronicles 4, and you get the genealogies of all the sons, all the 12 tribes of Israel. But interestingly, if you look at verse 1, it begins with Judah. You would expect it to begin with Reuben, because Reuben's the firstborn, but that's not where it starts. It starts with Judah. This highlights the fact that because of what's kind of said in Genesis 49 about Judah, Judah becomes one of the preeminent tribes in Israel's later history. Matter of fact, when they're coming out from Egypt in the Exodus, like, it's one of the biggest tribes just in terms of sheer number. And throughout the history, it becomes one of the most influential tribes. And again, it's also the one from whom is the Messiah, according to the flesh. It is significant that Reuben is not listed first, nor Simeon, nor Levi, for that matter, because they were all older. They were born before Judah, but they found themselves excluded through their various egregious sins of excess. Judah comes first, then Simeon, and then Reuben. And if you're wondering why, 1 Chronicles 5, 1 and 2 makes it clear. You read that and you see a preface to Reuben's genealogy where we are more or less reminded of the events that take place in Genesis 48 and 49, which are the blessings, Genesis 48, of Ephraim and Manasseh, Joseph's sons, and then in Genesis 49, the blessings of all of them, where he talks about why Reuben won't have preeminence. But let me just quote 1 Chronicles 5, 1 and 2 right here. The sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's couch, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, so that he could not be enrolled as the oldest son. Though Judah became strong among his brothers and a chief or a ruler came from him, yet the birthright belonged to Joseph. Essentially, the chronicler says that Ephraim and Manasseh received the birthright, Genesis 48, while Judah received the kingdom, Genesis 49. One other note that I want to make quickly about that is what we didn't say yesterday is in Genesis 48, he adopts Ephraim and Manasseh as his own sons, like almost in place of Joseph. We talked about to increase the fruitfulness of that line, to give a third son basically to Rachel. And in Genesis 49, he doesn't mention Ephraim and Manasseh. And I had actually someone reach out and say, why is that the case? Why aren't Ephraim and Manasseh mentioned here? And if you look at 1 Chronicles 5, 1 and 2, you have the birthright was given to the sons of Joseph. And then later it says the birthright belonged to Joseph. And so those terms are used interchangeably, the sons of Joseph and Joseph. Those are used interchangeably, and they mean the same thing. And so what I take that to mean is that in Genesis 49, when he speaks to Joseph, talking about Joseph, he is actually speaking to Ephraim and Manasseh, and I'm guessing they were present when all of this was said. In Genesis 49, 5 through 7, Jacob said he would scatter Simeon and Levi throughout Israel. We know, if you read 1 Chronicles 6, that Levi ended up dispersed throughout 48 cities throughout all of the tribes of Israel. But in 1 Chronicles 4, 32 through 43, it looks like Simeon did not have one set place to live, but was somewhat dispersed throughout different locations. So you have verse 32 listing some different villages. Then 39 and 40 makes it seem as though they were wandering around, almost nomadic, looking for good pasture land. And then 42 and 43 mentions that some of them went to Mount Seir, which that's actually where Edom is, and they lived there. There's also a note that Simeon's family did not multiply like Judah's did, which that's 1 Chronicles 4:27. And so it seems like not only were there fewer because of this consequence of what Simeon and Levi did, but they weren't able to group together and live together as a tribe like the other tribes did. In 1 Chronicles 6, we are given some insight into Ephraim's territory, even though it's actually talking about Levi. First, in 1 Chronicles chapter 6, verse 67, we see that Shechem, the city of Shechem, yes, that Shechem, is in Ephraim's territory. Now, this jives with what is very likely the most accurate reading of Genesis 48:22. At the end of his blessing of Ephraim and Manasseh, the ESV says, I give you one mountain slope over your brothers that I took from the Amorites with my sword and my bow. But the literal wording is actually, I give you Shechem over your brothers. Shechem may also mean shoulder, hence the mountain slope that you read in the ESV. But in other words, Jacob, though he disagreed with their methods and tactics, still acknowledges that he conquered the Amorites, a catch-all term for inhabitants of Canaan, with his sword and bow, even though that's what happened with Simeon and Levi. They took and conquered that city, Shechem. But he says, I took that with my sword and bow, and I'm giving it to you, Shechem, over your brothers. He bequeaths this as part of the birthright to Ephraim. And for further evidence, see also Joshua 24:32, where the sons of Israel buried Joseph's bones in a plot of land Jacob had bought from the Shechemites. You can read about that in Genesis 33:19, which happened before the slaughter of Genesis 34. And so there's this plot of land that he bought and has given to them, but also what he took with his sword and bow, as he says, what really his sons took, but he counts that as his own, even though he disagrees with the fact that it happened. He also gives that to Joseph. And so Joseph is buried in the inheritance of Joseph, really of his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. But Shechem is in Ephraim. The other important thing is that Shechem is listed as a city of refuge. That's 1 Chronicles 6:67 once again. Now what that means is that this is crazy, a city of refuge. Anyone who kills another person, basically unintentionally, could flee there for refuge from what the scriptures call the avenger of blood, which is probably one of the relatives of the slain person. And they were able to have a hearing with the elders of that city and stay there and live until the death of the high priest, after which point he was free to leave. So Shechem, the location of a massive slaughter of men, becomes a city of refuge for a manslayer. And who are the people who live in the cities of refuge? The Levites, the very tribe of the patriarch, of their patriarch, who took part in the slaughter of Shechem. So the Levites, the descendant of the one who slaughtered Shechem, they live in Shechem, and it becomes a city of refuge for a manslayer. That's just filled with irony, but it's also filled with a sort of beauty in some regard, as God somehow redeems both Levi and that city and transforms them into something good, something better than their history would tell you that they should have been or could have been. Anyway, with all of that, just be encouraged to read the Bible and keep reading it and studying it over and over and over. Like, you finish Revelation, start right back into Genesis. Before long, you'll be making crazy and awesome connections and seeing how the Bible is really one great and grand story. And you'll see all the ways in which one part of Scripture helps you interpret another part and brings greater clarity to the other parts of Scripture. It's really a genius work of literature, but even more than that, it can make us wise for salvation. Let me give one quick interesting note, and I want to do this about that prophecy concerning Dan. Some scholars believe that the outsized influence in bringing justice for Dan, and really for the people of Israel, they think that refers to Samson. Now, Dan's name means judge. You can go back to Genesis chapter 30, verses 5 and 6, and see his mother name him Dan and say, "The Lord basically has judged in my favor." That's the key word. The name Daniel in the Old Testament means "my God," Daniel, "my God," Daniel. El, Elohim, God, is my judge. So also, if you didn't know, Samson was of the tribe of Dan. You can read about that in Judges chapter 13, verse 2. His parents were of the tribe of Dan. Now, he was one man. Samson was one man, but he effected great deliverance for the people from their enemies and brought justice. I mean, literally, Judges 15, 20 says he judged Israel. He was one of the judges. He brought justice for them from their oppressors. He killed many of Israel's enemies, both in his life and in his death. So it seems as though he had a greater impact on events for the good of Israel than one man should otherwise have been able to have, like this outsized influence, like where the Philistines, right, the lords of the Philistines and all of their armies, this one man should be no match for this whole army, this whole people. Just like a serpent should really be no match for a horse and its rider. And yet, if the serpent goes unseen and strikes the heels, the rider falls off. So it's certainly an interesting thought to think that, you know, that's where kind of a lot of scholars take that prophecy. Let me close by talking just about quickly the best we have to offer. I truly hope you were encouraged by yesterday's look into Genesis 49. Like, I believe this tells our story. And what I mean by that is that the best we have to offer is a mixed bag. When left alone, when left to our own devices, we will have moments of doing the right thing and many, many more moments of doing the wrong things. But even our good things, those right things that we do, will still fall woefully short because they're done from unregenerate hearts that are opposed to God and His ways. Like, it's not just that left to ourselves, we do the wrong things. It's that we're the wrong sorts of people inwardly. And even after conversion, we continue to be a mixed bag, though hopefully, throughout our lives, it becomes less and less mixed because of the Spirit's work of sanctification. But at no point is our hope ever in our works or even in our increasing righteousness or this mixed bag of good and bad that we have to offer. Like our hope is never in the best we can produce, never in the best that we have to offer, because that's always going to be a mixed bag. Our hope then is always only to be in God, and therefore to be hope indeed. Like it becomes that confident certainty because it's in God, who never offers a mixed bag, but only good to his people. Our God, who is also Israel's God, is our hope, right? We said yesterday, Israel's God is Israel's hope. So it is for us. Our God, Israel's God, is our hope. We place all of our eggs into the basket of the righteous life, substitutionary death, and glorious resurrection of the Lion of the tribe of Judah. So walk confidently in him. Lean the full weight of your eternal destiny upon him. Those who trust in him will never be put to shame. Have a great week. I love you, people.